The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. Our guest is Andy Karlikar. He is Managing Director of Global Research and Strategy at Principal Real Estate Investors, the dedicated real estate unit of Principal Global Investors. His responsibilities include helping with allocation of capital via the creation of real estate portfolio strategies. And along those lines, he recently authored a report titled Inside Real Estate. It's an annual report in which he does his strategy outlook, this one obviously for 2017. He joins us by telephone to discuss his conclusions from that report. Andy Karlikar, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Pleasure to have you here. So let's cut to the big stuff. What is the major takeaway in your strategy outlook for real estate? What one thing would you say, would you bring into the fullest relief and say that this was struck more deeply than in any other finding or any other pronouncement you made?
Absolutely, Mike. Actually, we came out with three or four themes which we think are going to be quite important as we look out at 2017 and maybe even beyond. And they're all equally important. So maybe I'll just mention them all and
sure.
Maybe highlight one which we think is going to be particularly important. In no particular order, they are followers. We expect greater volatility and policy uncertainty as we look out in 2017 and 2018. The second associated theme with that is monetary policy is going to reflect that uncertainty. That is, we do expect it to tighten, but in a more gradual manner than perhaps what the markets are anticipating. In turn, that leads us to our third theme, which is beta is not going to lead to outperformance in an environment where rates are tightening. We think the investor will outperform by selecting specific strategies across the risk quadrant. As we look across, in this environment, we think debt is marginally a little bit more attractive than equity. And the final thematic is that we do expect the U.S. to remain a global favorite in terms of real estate investment opportunities. So, Mike, I think if you were going to highlight one theme that is perhaps going to be something to watch for most carefully over the next 12 to 18 months, it is the theme of volatility and policy uncertainty.
Let's talk about that volatility. We are coming to the end of what a lot of people, at least I'd say there's a consensus that we're coming towards the end of the real estate cycle. Is that what is leading you to conclude that there's going to be greater volatility, or are there other forces at play that you think are going to exact that force on the real estate business?
You know, Mike, it's an interesting question, and there's a lot of talk about cycles, but I do want to point out one thing, is that cycles don't die of old age. And specifically, you need a catalyst that pushes the cycle towards its conclusion, whether you look at economic cycles or real estate cycles. And if you look out at where we are in the real estate cycles, there doesn't appear to be an immediate catalyst that's going to push us over the edge in terms of a correction in real estate values. Now, we certainly do expect a slowdown in real estate values, which is something that has already started to occur if you look at the various indices that track real estate performance. But when I meant volatility, I meant generally policy uncertainty and volatility, i.e., you know, what are the new administration's policies going to be with trade? How is it going to treat China? How is it going to reform tax policy? How is that going to impact real estate, et cetera, et cetera? So I think I rather focus on policy, and I don't think it's necessarily related to where we are in the cycle, although obviously if policy starts to head a certain direction, then it may have certainly an impact on real estate values and real estate cycles.
When you talk about tighter monetary policy, obviously we've gone through this really protracted period of quantitative easing. There's a lot of criticism of central banks that they're going to create inflation. That has not been the case to date anyway. When you talk about tighter monetary policy, are you saying that the Fed and other central banks are probably going to back away from that whole quantitative? They already have, but are you seeing just basically a tighter money policy all the way around because that has kind of run its thread and done what it was intended to do?
Well, interestingly enough, Mike, if you look at the major global central banks, the US, Japan, the BOJ, ECB, Bank of England, there does appear to be a bit of a divergence that is occurring between certainly our central bank, the Fed, and the other major developed central banks. So I don't think you're necessarily seeing a withdrawal of monetary policy or a tightening of monetary policy as in a global cohesive manner. In fact, what you're seeing is a potential divergence where our central bank seems to be indicating a slightly tighter monetary policy, whereas the central banks in Europe, the central bank in Japan certainly, and the central bank in China continue to indicate easing monetary policy. So I don't think you can paint the whole world with one single brush. We are seeing potentially a very interesting divergence in policy.
Now, you did allude to the fact that we've got a new president in the White House. What are some of the pros and cons to the policies he's articulated thus far, with the understanding that he's equivocated on some of these? I mean, he just today, I was reading that he has told China that he does believe in the One China policy, and it sounds like he's gone back and forth on some of the toughness with trade a little bit. But probably complicating your assessment of the whole thing, but are you able to say what the pros and cons are in terms of the policies that look firmest?
Good. That's a tough one, Mike. But clearly, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around anything as we forecast out what the new administration might do. But given what we know, it seems that the president certainly has a pro-business, pro-growth approach, which is clearly a big positive. He's also looking to reduce regulation in an appropriate fashion, which I think is also quite constructive. And another component of his potential policy is tax reform and a potential for infrastructure spending. The last two, tax reform or rationalization of the tax code and infrastructure spending, I think would be very, very significantly positive to the economy. Having said so, I think the markets are going to be a little cautious on how they treat infrastructure spending or any form of fiscal expansion, given that it's generally going to be construed as being quite inflationary. So in the grand scheme of things, if you rack up the pro-growth and policy stimulus, policy reform that the president is articulating, I think we could potentially see a significant catalyst to the U.S. economy over the next 2 to 3 years for sure. Now, in terms of what is perhaps not as constructive, as you've already touched on, is we don't know what will happen with trade, what is going to happen with tariffs. The president has suggested the potential for some sort of border tax adjustment. Now, he's also gone back and forth on that. He's also talked about potential tariffs of 35% to 45% on imported items from China and Mexico, which, if implemented, I think are going to be quite significantly negative for the U.S. economy. And I think the theme of economic nationalism, which I think the president certainly ran on during the campaign, is something that also is a potential con for our economy, which is highly integrated into the global economy at this point.
And, of course, we could remind ourselves that Donald Trump, President Trump now, is a real estate developer, has been, continues to be, some people would argue, and likely wouldn't. I mean, could we presume that Donald Trump's not the kind of guy who's going to do anything that he would consider injurious to the real estate business? Now, trade is one thing, but when it comes to things such as tax policy around real estate and regulations and whatnot, do you think it's safe to say that the real estate business has a friend in the White House?
You know, Mike, I think we have to see whether it's Donald Trump, the real estate tycoon, who ends up being the president over the next 4 to 8 years, whatever it may be, or is it Donald Trump, the nationalist, that is looking to fulfill some of the promises that he's made on his campaign? It's not clear at this point, although I would think naturally that he has a certain affinity to the real estate asset class, knows how it functions, knows how important it is to our economy, that he would probably take a fairly benign view towards the asset class. But he is a populist, or at least he's been elected as a populist. And so I think you need to keep that in mind and just really see how things unfold over the next 6 to 12 months. So I'm hopeful, but it's not clear to me at this point.
You know, we've seen more and more over the years that the presidents tend to get more credit than they deserve for a good economy and more blame for a bad economy. And as we head towards what, again, a lot of people are saying is the end of the cycle, that's a force that's beyond even a president's control. So I'm going to take a second bite at this apple, Indy, and ask you about when this real estate cycle is going to run out. You kind of indicated earlier that that's a little bit of hocus-pocus to try to guess these things. Do you have any time frame at all that you would where you would expect a correction in the market, or do you just feel like it's a crapshoot?
No, it's not a crapshoot, Mike. You know, there are clear signs that would suggest that there is a slowdown. Now, what you have to look for, in my view, is when that slowdown becomes a correction. Because I think if you look at where we are right now in terms of real estate returns, especially if you look at core real estate returns, when you look at the NCREIF Odyssey Index, or just the NCREIF NPI Index, you see a trend where core returns are decelerating towards their long-term mean after generating very, very strong above-average returns for the last 4 or 5 years. Decelerating to the mean, in my view, is more of the 8 to 10% return frame, which has been the historical long-term trend for private real estate. If you put that into global context, that's a very attractive return series if you're a global investor. The question that you got to ask yourself is, okay, do we continue to grow or deliver returns in the single digits, high single digits? And what is the catalyst that then leads us to a negative return? And so as we try doing the math and start looking out at what could push this return from high single digits to low single digits and then potentially lower than that, you're really looking for catalysts. And things that we will look for, certainly, and I'm going to answer your question right now, is if we see signs that interest rates are going up in a rather rapid fashion, and if that is happening, it's not being offset by equally strong growth in gains in NOI, net operating income. I think at that point, then, you can start making some sort of prediction that your real estate cycle is going to come under pressure. So you got to look at where rates are, how quickly they're going up, and you got to look at how quickly NOI growth is going. And frankly, if NOI growth is not able to keep pace with the pace of interest rate increases, I think that's when you will get the sense that the cycle is going to come to an end.
So I want to get back to the Federal Reserve for a moment, because some people have accused the Federal Reserve of creating a real estate bubble, as well as bubbles in other industries, by keeping the price of money artificially low with its monetary policies. Now they're starting to inch upward on interest rates. What's your take on that? Do you think that the Fed has overplayed its hand in terms of meddling in the market, and that real estate values have run up faster than they would have if the Fed had left things alone?
Let's look at what caused the Fed to be where it is, Mike. It was an asymmetric response to an asymmetric problem. The global financial crisis was no plain vanilla recession. It was a massive problem of global leverage. So the Fed really had little option but to embark on this extraordinary path of monetary policy, given that fiscal policy was really not an option at that point and really doesn't remain an option. So given that it's effectively one policy arm was tied behind its back, the Fed had little options but to do, in my view, what it has done. Now, I think nothing the Fed in hindsight would have wished that one thing would have worked better, that is, it did lead to very significant asset reinflation. As you've already pointed out, real estate values have recovered and then some as a result of this extraordinary monetary accommodation we've seen. I think what the Fed has missed, and what I think what has been disappointing about this, if you may, is that the asset reinflation has not led to redistribution of wealth. In other words, the mechanism, the transmission mechanism where asset replacement could have led to stronger consumption and thereby stronger economic growth has been missing, as you have clearly noticed during the path of this economic recovery over the 8 years. So I think while the Fed has been very, very good at really propping up assets and really delivering a policy during a period of extreme uncertainty, I think if you do want to knock the Fed, it's been that it's not managed to get the transmission mechanism going whereby asset replacement could translate into robust consumption. You know, arguably, you don't know if the Fed can control that lever or if it's a banking system that controls the lever. So I wouldn't necessarily throw the Fed on the bus for doing what it did. I think it had very few options. Now, the question you may logically ask is it time now to start easing? And it's time to throttle back on that policy. And I think you're beginning to see signs of that, as Chairperson Yellen has clearly indicated, over the last few months.
So given the current state of affairs in the real estate market, what does your report say about the investment strategy that makes the most sense right now?
You know, as you look out at the environment, given the both the economic environment and the capital markets environment, as well as the space market environment, you know, they all three kind of intermingle and sort of lead to a set of strategies. But I want to reiterate what I said at the beginning is you got to be very – beta is not going to really do your trick at this point. So you've got to be look at very specific strategies to deliver your outperformance, whether you're looking at absolute levels or in relative levels. So as we think about what those pockets could be, we think about debt. We think about high-yield debt, which we think has a very attractive risk profile, but also a very attractive return profile. We think that's a very interesting opportunity set over the next 3 to 4 years. We also like commercial mortgage-backed securities, CMBS, which we think is very, very well-placed to deliver, again, a very stable coupon type of return. And that, too, from an investment-grade portfolio of bonds. We think CMBS strategies make a lot of sense as we look out, especially in given that CMBS supply remains very muted compared to historical levels. And finally, the third strategy that we still think has some merit is in the private equity arena, in the build-to-core, lease-to-core sort of segment, but very, very selectively. Within the build-to-core, lease-to-core kind of strategies, we think B-plus apartments, where there's an undersupply and where there's significant demand, could be a very interesting opportunity set. And we also think that there's some opportunities within the student housing space, especially in the build-to-core kind of adjacent-to-campus strategy.
So the United States has been a major beneficiary of the real estate capital flows now for years, coming from Asia, Europe, the Middle East. What is the U.S. standing in the world currently with regard to its real estate market, especially in light of the fact that the gateway markets in this country and other major markets besides the gateways have become so expensive? Are you expecting these positive capital flows from overseas to continue?
I think if you step back, Mike, and just look at the U.S. From a big picture perspective, it is still the most attractive market, both in terms of opportunities, in terms of liquidity, in terms of size, in terms of depth. So from a long-term perspective, I certainly expect the U.S. to remain absolutely a global favorite for investors. Now, there might be years where it might dip to number two or three, but I think it's generally going to remain a favorite market for many, many years to come. Over the short term, I think what's hard to predict is what policy impact is going to be. And I think that might have a little bit of impact on how foreign investments, whether it's tax, whether it's trade, whatever you call it, they might have a little bit of adjustment as they try and figure out whether that might have an impact on their investment strategies. But generally speaking, I fully expect, given its growth profile, given the availability of debt capital, given the investment universe, that the U.S. will remain a top market for global investors in 2017 and even 2018.
Do you expect capital flows from overseas to rise or stay flat or decline slightly in 2017? Would you go so far as to make a prediction on that?
2016 was a high watermark for offshore capital. I think when you calculate, when it's all said and done, about 15 to 16% of U.S. transactions were accounted by offshore capital. I think 2017 will be hard-pressed to match that. So I think we might see a little bit of a decline in 2017, especially if you layer in the regulations that have been put into place into the offshoring of Chinese capital. So I do think, given that we had a high water mark in 2016 and a tougher environment for Chinese offshore capital, that 2017 will be a bit of a we'll see slower, lighter flows from offshore capital than we've seen in 2016.